you are, what you do, and why you do it.
Hello, Oliver. Thank you for having me on your show. I'm excited to be here in talking about how we awaken as humanity. So my name is Anna Gatman. And my favorite topic is how to help humanity evolve its consciousness, awaken, and accelerate our spiritual growth in order to meet the intensity of our times and show up fully to elevate humanity and our planet. That is what I do, help people do it through their inner personal challenges, because we each have a different personal challenge that may seem like our individual challenge, and it is. But as we clear our challenges and work through them, we elevate ourselves and therefore elevate the collective conscious of humanity. So I'm excited to be on your show because I'm curious to know about you and what draws you to this topic.
Yeah, so I had my awakening when I was 21, and I was on medication for Tourette's for 10 years before that. So I was trapped in my head, always trying to work out everything and everything, and thoughts never ended. And then I had my awakening, came off the medication, and then all of a sudden everything became clear. And it was like going from being blind to seeing, or being deaf to suddenly hearing sound. And then ever since then, I've been on this journey of just always wanting to know more about things that I don't know. And because all we've really had is human connection, I'm now on a path to seeking out other awakened people to build a kind of a universal following where we all awaken each other and then awaken more people, and basically just create a massive human collective consciousness of awakened people. And I think that there's a lot more people waking up to this stuff. And that is obviously brilliant for the planet in terms of its earth resonance.
So it's interesting for me because there's so many young people who are suffering from mental health issues, depression, and just, you know, hopelessness in our world. When you see what's going on, it's like, what do you feel awakened you? Like, what made it feel like I'm seeing things different now? Is it just getting off the medication? I mean, it had to be something more, because
so my dad always gave me
to this topic.
Yeah, my dad always gave me answers and time. So when he grew up, when he was 9, he was mentored by someone who was a very high up military man in the UK. So he's like very military, very direct, very blunt, very open. And he used to spend hours and hours and hours with him driving across the country in Singapore, where he lived. So he would ask like all these questions, you know, why are we here? Why is there laws? Why do we have to go to school? Why is there a God? Why is that person wearing a turban? And literally just would answer every single question my dad had. My dad was 9. So by the time my dad was like 12, he had access to, again, a very incredibly smart military man. He's been around for many years in his 70s, which most people of that age, 9 years old, are never going to get exposed to. Most people are just in the garden digging up worms and asking, what's this worm? Oh, it's a beetle. Okay, fine. So then my dad had all this information growing up. So therefore, when I was born, it felt natural to do the same to me. I would ask daddy, what's this? He'd give me the answer. And I had millions of more questions and he gave me millions of more answers. So then I came into the real world of school systems where most kids are there just to find friends and learn about science, and I've got billions of all these types of thoughts in my head that most kids don't have. So I'm then in the class thinking about all this stuff like my dad did, instead of focusing on what the teacher says. And then neuron stimulation, right? When I worked out all my thoughts, there was no twitching because there was no stimulation. I'd worked it all out. My neuroplasticity was going berserk for so many years, and then it just relaxed at 21. So my awakening, it was unplanned, because it was just me trying to catch up with all these thoughts, which never ended. And I realized that it's not going to end. So I had to learn to meditate to stop new thoughts coming in. And that's what really keeps me sane. Meditation every day, half an hour.
Yeah. You know, that's what I talk about in my latest book, Shift Calling, A Practical Guide to Accelerate Your Spiritual Growth, that the shift that's calling you, the thing that is the biggest challenge for you, that you think is your enemy that's not going away is actually your ally, as in your story. It's your ally that is, it's your dearest ally because it's not going away. It's saying, I am not going away until you listen to me and you actually do something about it. So it really is important to shift our perspective to see our challenges as opportunities and our wounding as an opportunity to heal versus as we are victims of life circumstances. These are opportunities that we have. They might not be easy. For all of us, they're not easy. I've had my own share of them, but those are our allies. And that's what I hear in your story, that your condition became your ally and become your liberation in a sense, right?
Yeah. So my friend the other day came up with a cracking quote, and he says that we resist persists, and basically,
right,
whatever you try and push away will keep coming back because it's meant to be there for us to face it until we find a way around it. So if I didn't work out all my thoughts, they'd still be there. And part of that was learning, you know, how the real world works, you could say. It's almost like shoving homework in front of you, saying you're not going to go outside until you do it. So you have to do your homework before you can go outside.
Yeah.
That we persist, that we try and resist, persist means that it will just keep coming back. It's there for a reason. It's like an itch that you've got to scratch,
right,
and it will just keep being there until you scratch it.
Right.
And it's just to align us up with that truth behind that, what we're resisting. Like, why is that there? There's a reason. You're basically having to transform into that energy pattern that you're not quite in yet.
Right.
You're in a different vibration, yeah, and it's like pulling you forward magnetically to get there until it feels right. And then there's nothing to resist because you're in it. You're going with the wave as opposed to going against the wave.
Absolutely. So my question for us together is, like, how do we help more young people realize that the world is not, it is falling apart and old systems are crumbling, but there's also a beautiful new world that is there at the same time. The sun is shining every day. The moon is rising. The flowers are blooming. The rain is coming, or the snow, wherever you are. That hasn't changed, and there's so much goodness in the world, but the news only shows us wars and the atrocities that we're doing to each other. And I think that young people are really suffering because public school doesn't give you the tools, for sure. And parents are exhausted just working, sometimes 2-3 jobs to make ends meet. Like, how do we help young people awaken to the fact that they were born in the right time? There's a beautiful quote by Ajit George, and I'm paraphrasing it a bit. If you don't know how to fit into this world, it's because you're here to change it. And so if you're suffering in this world, think of it, you are here to change it. And that's why you're feeling so odd in the world that's now, because you're not meant to live in this current world. You are meant to transform it into what the light and the love that you want to live in, and the kindness and the community. And so really it's a question I hold. I have a 29-year-old and a 23-year-old, a 24-year-old, and how do we help younger people is a big question that I live with.
So the other day, someone I know said that she can never hold down a job. No matter what job she goes to, there's always bullying. There's always like people see her differently, or they act differently towards her. And it's the same pattern in every job. And school bullied. Okay, when I go to the bigger school from primary, it will change. Didn't change, it just continued. Then I thought, okay, if I go to college, it will change because they don't know me. It continued. So it was like, okay, it seems to be me. It seems every time I sit next to somebody, they move away. I need to smell my armpits. It's me, right? So I said to her, when you realize that no matter where you go, the pattern continues, you've got to realize it's something to do with you, and it's not a bad thing. You are meant to be a leader. You're meant to create your own business. You're meant to work for yourself. You're not supposed to be in an environment that's built for somebody else and you're working for them. Essentially, you've got followers working for the leader, employees working for the boss, and you're a leader mindset. You don't fit in. You're a black sheep. So I said, this means you're supposed to work for yourself. When I was younger, I just never fit in. And then now I'm older, I realize that I'm just simply a different vibration. So what I would say to people who are feeling like a black sheep is become aware immediately that it's not anything bad. It's just we're in a world full of so many different species. There's sheep, there's cows, there's goats, there's deers, there's rabbits, there's monkeys. When you go to a school system, you're a sheep and you're put in a field full of cows. You're not supposed to fit in. You're not a cow, you're a sheep. So therefore, eliminate yourself from a field full of cows and find sheep, right? Unfortunately, in school, you can't just piss off to another school because you're in that school. So it's very hard. And what if there's no other sheep there, right? So what I would say is when you become aware that you are not the same, you have to go inwards. You have to analyze and work out questions that you don't have answers to until you have answers. Why don't I fit in? Why does that person bully me? Okay, so what have I got that person doesn't have? Oh, my parents are together. Their parents aren't together. Okay, let's explore that. Why would that person bully me? Because his parents aren't together. Maybe he hasn't had much love. Okay, so I've had love. Okay, so if I was an animal in this kingdom and I saw a carcass, which everyone was eating, no one's sharing it, they're just going to grab it and take it. So you think, oh, okay, maybe I've got something love that that person hasn't got. He's trying to grab it and take it because he hasn't got it. Ah, it makes sense. It's nothing I'm doing wrong. He's not a bad person. He wants my love. That means I've got something he hasn't got. That's a good thing. I've got love, he hasn't. I've got the upper hand here. So now when they're bullying you, you're not thinking, oh, why me, poor me? It's, oh, I've got a gift here and everybody wants it. So now you see the same situation completely different. And rather than being the victim, you are now not the victim. And a lot of this, like, shit that's going on with younger people is they're all feeling victimized by the outside and everyone's feeling the same thing. So it's not the outside, it's the inside that they are being conflicted with. And it's the only way out is to find answers yourself. You can't learn the answers. You can be taught why, but you really have to translate that into your own language of, I need to understand why Timmy is bullying me, even though Timmy's bullying that person and bullying that person. When you have answers within, you feel whole. You don't have any nervousness with the unknown. You have your answers. It's almost like being a jiu-jitsu master. You can go out, you don't need to fight, but you've got that confidence that if anyone tries to do anything to me, I can handle myself. And really, it's building that connection between you and yourself, and then the outside doesn't affect you.
Right. So the two things I want to say to build on that, one is the 1 in 60 rule in aviation, and I'll share that in a second. But the other one is that one of the things is that we grow up thinking we are just human beings, that that's all we have. And so then it makes a lot of sense that we feel like we're victims of circumstances. Like I suffered a lot in school. That became very traumatizing. I finished high school swearing I'd never go back to school. I hated it so much. And today I have a PhD and my second book just came out. I didn't plan on it. I swore I'd never go back because I suffered so much. But so people, when we only see ourselves as human beings, then what's happening in the human world becomes the circumstances that we grow up in and that we are living in. If we start, as you say, going inwards and perceiving ourselves as spiritual beings as well, because it's not that we're not human beings having a meditative experience 20 minutes a day or every 3 years when we go on a retreat. We are spiritual beings. We are consciousness incarnate into a human being material form. And as we remember that we come from consciousness, from divine consciousness, from sacred divine consciousness, suddenly, our circumstances are just circumstances. They don't define us. They can fortify us. They can be the challenge through which we grow and awaken. So, but the most important thing is to see ourselves first as consciousness, divine consciousness, the spiritual human beings, the combination of that too. So that's really important as a way to awaken. And you speak about it when you say go inwards and see your gift. That's connecting more to the essence of who we are, to our soul. And then we can walk in the world, as Jesus said, walk in the world, but not of it, right? We can be in this world and live in it, but we are so much more than the physical human being that we are. So that's one point. The second point is this 1 in 60 rule. So in aviation, if a pilot, will shift a 1 degree the trajectory of the plane. Now, if they will land at that moment, there you wouldn't see a difference, right? Because it's just a one small degree shift. But if they continue flying for 10 minutes, 10 minutes afterwards, they'll be 60 miles off track. And as they continue for 3-4 hours, they'll end up in New York instead of in Chicago with just one little degree shift, which was insignificant to begin with, right? And so compounding, a small shift compounded over time creates a very different end destination. And so what's important to know is that spiritual awakening, if we call it that, is not some huge thing. You don't need to go into a cave. You might not need to go to India. It's like, it's in here, and all you need to do is one small shift. If you just start saying to yourself, and I'll give a very simple example. If I keep telling myself, I'm shit, I'm not worth anything, I'm shit, I'm not worth anything. I mean, look at my shoulders are different. I'm beginning to slouch. I'm beginning to feel awful. If I just shift that and say, I am precious, I am worthy, I am precious and I am worthy, I'm already opening my shoulders. That's a small, tiny shift. And if you start saying that to yourself, I am precious, I am worthy, 3 times a day, a year from now, you'll be somewhere else, somewhere very, very different. So we're not talking about some spiritual awakening that is huge and you have to give up all of your entire life. All you need to do is one small shift towards goodness, one small shift towards loving yourself more, one small shift towards seeing the goodness in the world, the beauty in nature, and that compounded, the views you'll see 3 months from now are going to be different. 2 years from now, completely different. And I feel that your story also attests to that.
Yeah, it's almost like years ago, tattoos used to be a massive thing, right? Back in the 1960s, then a phase where they weren't cool anymore. Like no one was getting tattoos. And then all of a sudden, about 8 years ago, people started getting tattoos and it became cool. Vapes. People now, loads of kids are now vaping. Before it was, say, smoking. In England, weed, cannabis, is basically the new smoking and vaping is the new smoking. And cocaine is the new weed. Cocaine is now taken as common as weed was. So it's almost like every year there's a new cycle, like there's a new strain of COVID, for example. So we know that people follow trends. So imagine if one person at school, some 10-year-old whose mum is a spiritual awakening guru, and let's just say for his 9th birthday party, his mum puts on a party for the 9-year-old and all of the friends come round and there's crystals, there's sage, there's cards, there's lights, mm-hmm. there's loads of cool shit that other parents don't have. You go around their house is a shithole, there's just balloons, there's sausage rolls and crisps and crap, and there's Coke and there's lemonade, and there's just like most just like normal stuff, right? Maybe a frog that pops up. So imagine that this mum, who's a spiritual awakening person, now introduces this 9-year-old and the 30 people in their class to this world. All of a sudden, it's mummy, my birthday. I want a party like her with all the crystals and all the sage and all that type of stuff. So now this kid has exposed 30 other kids to this new world. So then just imagine for that an hour when they're sitting down, rather than having a clown do some performing, you've got the spiritual mum talking about loving yourself. Thoughts have reactions. What you say to people affects people on a quantum level. You know, they show the rice scenario where you give love to rice and it doesn't go moldy. And then you have another jar of rice and you give hate towards it and it goes moldy. If a child sees that at an early stage, it will realize that what you say to people and other children in the class has huge effect on their whole body. And then all of a sudden, these kids have had access to this world that they probably would never, ever have access to in their lifetime. And now that could be the cool trend where rather than vaping, it's I have my crystals.
Right.
I have my tarot cards rather than Pokemon cards or Digimon cards or all the other crap that children have these days. Trump cards. They've got their tarot cards. Yeah. And all of a sudden, it's now cool to come out into the field with your tarot cards and your crystals. and maybe your EMF reader, where you can monitor EMF from people's phones and people's TVs. So changing what is possible, but it's like, how do you get that one thing ingrained in somebody for it to spread? Yeah. And the answer is just doing it and getting it out there and just trusting that nature will do what it does. You put a plant by a window, it will grow towards the sun. If you tell a young kid, love people and here's why scientifically, that should resonate inside them. They're still a human being, even though they're a 9-year-old, and it naturally should just collectively, they should all just start to love each other instead of hate each other.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, when you speak of all these trends, if cocaine is the trend now or whatever the trend is, I think it speaks to what I spoke about a minute ago, which is that the reason there is such a desire in teenagers to use mind-altering substances is because somewhere inside us, we know we come from this expansive state that our souls emerge from. And so, and as we don't get it at home most of the time, we definitely don't get it at school, the culture doesn't do it. And so we keep longing for something and we're looking for it and we don't have the conditions that are right in order to have a sacred ceremony of expanding into our, into the beauty of the universe, the wonder of the universe, the beauty of our soul. I mean, I've been involved with the psychedelic world for 3 decades and it's finally coming out in a big way. And I see, you know, teenagers are looking for that. They know inside, they don't have the words, no one's teaching them, but they're looking for this uplifting experience because just like me as a teenager, if what I had in my life, if that's all there is, it's not worthwhile living. And if all I need to do, well, I'm from Israel, so go to the army for 2 years, get married, have kids, have them grow. I mean, it's, I have all of that, but what's really giving me meaning is the spiritual aspect of it, the emotional aspect of being a parent. The you know, I homeschooled my kids, and so I really got to spend time with them and see all the milestones that they went through, and I just loved it. So it really speaks to, I really feel that young people are, they know inside, you each know that there's more to life than what you see in the news and what your parents tell you most of the time and what school tells you for sure. You know, there's always this one teacher who we admire and who tells us that there's more in us than anyone else tells us. And that becomes the teacher, right? That helps us feel that there's more to life. But I really, that the fact that mind-altering substances are not part of the culture as they are in indigenous cultures. There's an age for it, but it's always there because it is when you have those experiences, you see the world, you see the sacredness of the world, and you see your own preciousness and your own sacredness, and then you relate to the world in a different way, and then you walk in the world from a place of love and connection, and you feel that everyone's destiny is part of my destiny because we're one human consciousness. We're sharing one pool of consciousness rather than feeling I'm just gonna care about myself, don't care about anybody else. And this consciousness of separation leads to wars at the end of it. And when we use mind-altering substances, these sacred plants, we begin to see that we are part of a sacred whole, a beautiful sacred whole. And suddenly life has so much meaning. And I think that young people cannot articulate it, but they're really longing for it and want that. And that's why they go to substances that many times don't give, they give them an for a second, an uplifting experience, but then they don't do what sacred plants, for example, do.
So I don't want kids. And literally one of the many reasons is because I know what I had to go through at the school, black sheep trying to fit in. It's going to be even worse for them. Like the pressures now are just beyond even fathomable, right? So I also think if I homeschool my kid, for example, I could teach him all this stuff, but then he doesn't learn interaction with other human beings. He doesn't learn how to argue and not punch him in the face, that you can argue and just accept it. how you can see different opinions and all these skills that you can only learn by being with people. So, for example, your kids, how did they learn to basically fit in and socialize with other people if they were homeschooled? And was it hard to simply just go into a pub or an office where you've really kind of been just comforted at home? Easy love, it's just all pure and harmony, nothing's a problem. You go out into this world and then you with but twats everywhere. Like, how do they transition, or was it easy?
So there's what's called in the homeschooling world the S word, which is socializing, because everybody who is not in, who is in school, who is living the traditional educational system, is so worried that our kids will not be socialized. First of all, school is a recent invention. People have been socialized throughout centuries, whatever, 150, 180 years that the school system exists, and it existed to begin with to babysit so people could go to work, as well as to create the workforce for the Industrial Revolution. That's why school started. So, it's impossible for someone not to be socialized. When you homeschool, you don't live in isolation. You actually make your daily life and your world the playground for learning, and everything is learning. And you know, in my book, I actually speak about that. I speak about the shifts that were significant in my life, and homeschooling my kids was one of the bigger shifts. So imagine, you know, both my children were into Lego. So imagine a kid playing Lego. Well, you think that's just an after school activity. You need to, there's so many skills. If you, again, if you expand your perspective on what there is in Lego, there is so much learning there. You have to be quiet. You have to be patient. You have to be to follow the rules, at least the first time, to learn to build a model. Then you can go wild and be creative. And so there's creativity, there's following rules, there's patience, there's delayed gratification, right? Because you have to wait till the model is ready. It breaks, it doesn't work, you have to come and ask for help. There's so much learning in an activity that we have separated as just a recreational thing in the afternoon. And so if you start looking at the world as a playground and everything is a learning experience, then you see that kids, they're like sponges. They want to learn and they want to socialize. And so you find other families who are socializing. There was a time when all we had was our family and my best friend and her family. And I thought it was so funny because everybody was so afraid that they wouldn't socialize, and they were fighting. He was two families, and they had all these issues. Instead of this being harmonious two families homeschooling, there were so many issues between the families, because that's what kids need to do. So they were doing it. It wasn't easy for me. It wasn't easy for them. It wasn't. Then it expanded, and we had many more families, and we could choose the families that fit us more. But it's do not worry about that. You need to have the stamina to homeschool. You need to have the capabilities to do that. Although I can tell you that in Israel, many families, they choose to live at a lower cost of living in order to homeschool, because it is so important for them, for their kids, to remain curious, to remain excited about learning. My older child went to first grade for a month, and they began slouching. Like, after a few weeks, they asked not to go to school in the morning anymore. And then they were slouching to school, and I could just see their spirit, this beautiful spirit of a child, was slowly, slowly just, you know, contracting. And I thought, you know, I got a PhD in transformative learning. I know what conditions you can create for people to have really interesting transformative learning experiences. I'm not going to send my kids to school and go find a job. So my spouse worked, and I was with the kids. And, you know, they'll have, you know, they'll come out with their story, and they might say that it was hard many times, and it was, but I loved it. And I think they're better human beings because they're free thinkers. They care about the world, and they weren't damaged by the conventional thinking They were probably damaged by other things.
So when you see how they've ended up, right, and you compare it to other people in the local area that also went to schools, right, can you see there is a massive difference between them as two individuals now?
You know, I can't. What I can see is they're independent thinkers. They're curious. They're critical thinkers. So they look at the world from a different perspective. They care about the world, and they are going inwards much more because they were taught to go inwards and find their own way. And sometimes that's hard, you know, like, what's the meaning of life? Is there a meaning? Well, if there's no meaning, then how do I find my own meaning in it? And I actually write in the book what the meaning of life is and what the purpose of life is, but my kids are going through that. And maybe when you're in school and you're in sports and all of that, you don't have time to do that because it's busy work. You have so much, the load is so big, and it's just about getting through and then finding a job and then doing that. And so you just never have the time to go inward. So I think they had a lot of time to, they learned to reflect and to go inwards and think deeply. But the friends they have are deep thinkers as well. And many of them went to school. So I feel like there's just different ways. Some people grow up this way and some people grow up that way. It's interesting. Whatever is in the mainstream is the norm, and anything that's outside, it's as if it's dangerous. So it's as if it's not going to allow you to be like everyone else in the mainstream. And the fact is that school didn't exist until a very short time ago. And with, you know, everything that's outside, I mean, even I had two home births. Well, the first one ended in the hospital, but the second one was a full home birth. And, you know, there's a large percentage of death in birth in the United States in hospital. Nobody ever speaks about it. It's just part of the casualties. God forbid there'd be a death in a home birth, and they'd question if home births are safe or not. But in hospitals, there are deaths in all the time, and nobody ever mentions it because it's in the mainstream. So you really have to think very differently. Go first with, what does your heart want? What does your soul tell you? What feels right to you? Just like you went on your journey. And then you become like a pillar of light, or you become the guiding light. Like in the Olympics, there's the flame, right? There's the torch. You become the bearer of the torch of light for others who go, wow, she homeschooled. It's like I had friends and family who began homeschooling because it worked for them as well after they saw that I had the courage. So be the courageous one. If your soul tells you, this is not for me, what's going on here, I need something else, your spiritual journey then is to be the one who is going to carry the torch. And if you can do it, then others can do it. It's just like in sports. Once, like, no one believes it's possible to pass a specific mark, right? To run at the greater speed until one person does it. And one person does it, suddenly everybody in the field is able to jump higher or run faster. But until then, they say, well, it's not possible. So maybe you're the bearer of the flame that needs to do something different. And the way to know that is just to go inwards and say, is this right for me? And if it's not right, just keep looking. If you make the decision to live according to the prompts of your heart or your inner being, your higher self, whatever you call that, the world will organize itself to support you. It really will. You just have to take a step into the world. There's this famous scene with Harrison Ford. I think it's Lord of what was the series called?
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings. No. Harrison Ford is the Raiders of the Lost Ark. And there's the scene where he's running away from a group of people that are chasing him, and he arrives at the abyss, And now he can either jump into the abyss and die or be killed. And obviously he decides to jump into the abyss, and the stones, there's stones that rise with each step that he takes and he's able to cross. So that's really, that's the, life is a spiritual practice. And that's a spiritual practice that we need to do, is jump into the abyss. All we need to do, I know an abyss is a big thing, but all we need to do is one small shift. Be the bearer of the torch. Listen to your soul, what it tells you, and then do small degree shifts. And the universe is going to start organizing in your favor. It does that.
So to end, if you had one day left to live and you had a microphone for the rest of the world, what is the one thing that you've learned in your life that you would tell everybody?
Wow, that's probably one of my next books, is the focus of that. I would tell people to find ways to expand their consciousness, because I think the expansive principle is the most important one in the world, because when you expand your consciousness, you receive. So I still have a day, so I have a few minutes to explain this. So when you expand your, if you look at life from a very narrow perspective, you might just have one choice and you go, that's the only choice I have. If you expand your consciousness and create more spaciousness, you just grow the field of information that's available to you. And suddenly you have multiple solutions. And so expanding your consciousness, if you do it through meditation, through deep breathing, through dancing, through listening to your favorite music, through mind-altering substances, however you watching a sunset, walking in the forest, however you do to create more spaciousness and calm, that is your way to a better life of wholeness, of fulfillment, of joy. So that would be my one advice. And I think that, for example, when we connect with other people, we've also expanded, because now it's not just about me. So connection is about being two now or being five now. So if we've expanded, it's not just my heart, it's your heart and their heart. And so now there are three hearts here. So the expansive principle, I know it might sound very abstract, but it is the most important principle, I think, in the universe in order to create wholeness and joy and fulfillment.
Okay. Anything
and to you awaken.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anything you want to promote or plug before we end?
So if you go to my website, which is annagatman.com, GATMON, and it's double N, so annagatman.com, sign up for my mystical moment messages. Twice a week, I send I connect to a quality like beauty. This week, it's comfort, ease, courage. And I receive a message from the quality, and I send those messages out to you, and they just inspire and help you live and shift your day. So the mystical moments on annagatman.com.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for your wisdom. And I'm grateful that you came on.
It's a pleasure, Oliver. I so enjoyed talking to you. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So tell me something. We're off now, right?
Just one second. One sec.